Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Every week, we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today, February 5th, 2010, I am delighted to welcome our featured guest, Zoe Keating, cellist and composer. Why did I want to say cellist there? Welcome, Zoe.
Hello.
For some reason, I can't talk today. I've been working too much in PowerPoint. But welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. Nice to be here.
Yes, very glad to have you. Now, I always loved your, before we ever got to talk, obviously you have 1.3 million plus Twitter users, and I'm a big Twitter user, of course, and I love your description. For people that don't know what it is, for your bio section, it says, cello, computers, and pancakes, the daily twitterings of a professional avant-cellist and an amateur nerd. And looking back into your history a little bit more, it looks like you started out with an interest in computer sciences. Is that right?
Well, when I got out of college, yes, I got sucked up into the dot-com boom in San Francisco. And I worked for a startup there with just a few employees for a long time until the crash of 2001. So, that's what I was doing. And meanwhile, I was moonlighting with rock bands at nighttime.
Yeah, I bet people can't believe that that was sort of the beginning of the journey.
Yeah, I did start playing the cello when I was 8 years old, so I have been doing that for a long time, much longer than computers.
It's not something that you pick up quickly, like cricket. You know, you have to, like, learn the rules from being a child, otherwise you're out of the loop. And actually, talking about your childhood, you're Canadian, right?
That's correct, yes.
Sorry, I keep cutting you off. Go ahead.
Oh, no, yes, I am indeed Canadian. I admit it.
You admit it proudly, eh? So how did you end up, you know, what was your journey that brought you into the U.S. and eventually to the San Francisco Bay Area?
Well, I'm one of those dual citizens where I have an American parent and an English parent. And they met in Canada, and then, you know, so I was born in Canada, and then we moved to the U.S. when I was, in the 80s, so.
So that's why you don't say a boot?
Yeah, that's why I have this strange kind of mid-Atlantic accent, which is none of the above.
You don't fit in one category.
Yeah, I just take on the accent of whoever I'm talking to, I think, in order to fit in.
Well, I want to kind of quickly turn, because I think that one of the interesting things is that, you know, obviously with the background in technology or a little bit of technology anyway, you know, certainly it makes sense putting the two together that you would connect with your fan base, you know, so well online. But I think that there's sort of an art to that as well. And I'm curious how you found that, you know, in terms of, you know, using online channels to connect with fans. Like, how did that start for you? Has it always been important to you?
Well, I would say because my music career didn't start until after the internet was already around, that's always been a really important part of what I do. And my music is in this kind of niche. You know, I play the cello, it's instrumental, it's kind of a genre nebulous, and it just so happens that, you know, the world of, you know, social networking, as we call it now, is all about, it's not genre specific, you know, you can connect directly with people without having to go through a standard distribution channel like in the past, through a record label or through a record store even. So I actually think I couldn't have the career that I have today, even a decade ago. I don't think it would have been possible. And in fact, I think that's part of the reason why, you know, I spent my 20s working in tech and then didn't launch my music career until I was 30. And that's in a way because I needed this technological infrastructure to be there so that I could reach people directly without having to go through a middleman.
I'm curious if other artists that you work with, because you do collaborate with a lot of other artists, as I'm sure everyone mm-hmm. pretty much knows that follows you, that maybe, you know, perhaps have, you know, weren't, you know, certainly not part of the boom and bust here in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which is, you know, very culturally specific to this area, but maybe you're on the periphery of technology, or just it's just not part of their lives, right? They've come up more traditionally. Do any of them, you know, I mean, how do you find that in just generally, and then, you know, more specifically, has anybody ever come to you and said, hey, how do you work this internet thing?
All the time. I mean, I was a really early adopter. You know, I had a website. I think I made myself a website and bought my domain in 1997. Mm. I think probably maybe because I was in the Bay Area and because I was working in tech, to use these tools and to be continually learning new things every day, because everything's changing all the time, that just seems normal to me. So when some when somebody starts a new service in their garage, you know, and it's like, oh, let's try this thing, you know, it's called Friendster, or, you know, let's try. I would try them all. Because I'm not very good at separating my professional life from my personal life from my artistic life, it was inevitable that I would also use those things with music. And pretty much from the beginning, every musician I've ever worked with has always needed help. Like, can you help me make a website? Like, how do I do a blog? Or, you know, it's like, you know, how should I be on Twitter? Those are the questions I get now. So, for me, it just seems really natural.
So are there any – so what happens when someone has said to you in the past, can you help me with a website? I mean, what do you do with that? It seems like
it's kind of an
awkward situation almost.
It used to be. I mean, in the past, I used to actually do it. A long time ago, I used to just make websites for my friends' bands just because – they didn't know how to do it. Now I can't do that anymore, obviously.
Yeah, you're a bit busy.
What I tell people now is, you know, you don't even need to bother with a website. Just, you know, set yourself up with, with a good blog, you know, use all those sort of Web 2.0 tools where you don't have to start everything from scratch. You don't need to know how to code. So.
Yeah, that's helpful to not have to code.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
so much easier now, because there always used to be the problem that, you know, I'd make some band a little website and then they'd need to change it, and that would be so difficult to show them how to do that.
And time-consuming, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's interesting that, you know, I mean, you're at a place where, you know, you're part of the Hot 20 of 2009 in 7x7 magazine.
That was funny.
Because you seem so down to earth and, you know, kind of irreverent almost. How did that feel to get included that way?
I'm always very surprised by my success. Maybe that's my trick. Is that I find my success somewhat unbelievable. So when something like that comes along, or, you know, it's like when I'm on NPR or when I played the cello on Jay Leno, something I'm always kind of like, oh, okay, and I just do it. But it does surprise me also.
Yeah, I mean, it must be. I mean, you have an amazing list. I mean, you just listed a couple of, really high-profile appearances. And, you know, it's interesting, too, to think about how technology has influenced your actual music. And we have a question from Andy Dolph, who tweeted in, and he wanted to know from you how the technology you use to perform your music, if it limits you, or are there ways that it helps you?
I would complicate matters by saying both. It both limits me and helps me. First of all, in that there's no way that I could do what I'm doing without technology. So obviously it helps me in that respect, that I can go up there as a soloist and I can pretend that I'm like a chamber orchestra. mm-hmm. by playing all those parts myself. But it is very limiting also in that, you know, there are very defined ways to do things that are mm-hmm. the technology might allow me to do at first. And so I have to try to fit my grandiose scheme into this little small box. And often that's a very agonizing process. But it's also good because it means that I refine things.
Okay.
It's like I have to, I might have some, like, I might wake up in the morning with some grand musical symphony in my head and I want to go recreate it live. And the technology won't necessarily allow me to do that. So I have to try to refine it into its key elements. It's kind of like a distillation process. It's what design, it's what graphic designers do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, graphic designers, they spend all these, they spend weeks and weeks and weeks with tons of material working really hard to come up with one simple line on a page, you know?
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh, I could have done that. But actually, it took a lot of refinement to get there. So that's how my, that's how the technology both limits and helps my work, if that makes any sense.
No, it absolutely does. And I wonder how, you know, given that you've said before, you're kind of in this little niche, you know, if, you know, in a way, you know, it seems like one of the things that, you know, the music industry, it seems like from the outside looking in the music industry, there seems to be sort of like pairs at least of people that have, you know, sort of peer groups. And it seems mm-hmm. like, you know, more and more we're seeing artists like yourself who are really unique and maybe don't fit into a category. And so maybe you don't have like a direct peer. Is there any, you know, do you find that there's, you know, so I'm sort of getting to a roundabout way of asking in terms of community, either in person or, you know, online, that you find with other artists, you know, is that easier or harder given the kind of music that you produce or create?
I'm not sure if it's easier or harder. I do know that it is easier for me to find people who are doing things similar to me, whereas in the past I might have felt like I was all alone. It's kind of similar to, you know, when you're an alienated teenager and you think that you're the only weird person in your school, and then you discover that there are other schools with other weird people in them. I can relate to that whole feeling. So, it's, you know, I'm doing this perhaps esoteric thing on the cello, and it just so happens that there are other people out there doing it, and I can find them and connect with them on the internet. But one thing about you know, being in this position is that I do find it really difficult because the sort of the standard music industry is really based on what you sound like in relation to other artists.
Mm-hmm.
you know, like one of the first questions you get asked is like, name two bands that are similar to you. And I have a horrible problem with that question. So on the one hand, I feel like it's impossible for me to ever do that because by definition, like all these disparate sort of little musical artists doing their different little things aren't necessarily like anybody else. They really might be unique. And then at the same time, you can actually find people like that have some things in common with you on the internet. So did I answer your question at all?
You did. And what I'm wondering too is, you know, if there, you know, I'm thinking especially with the musicians that you collaborate with, are there any that you feel a certain affinity for or with that you've just gone, you know, hey, they get me because maybe they're doing something a little differently?
Sometimes it's more of a philosophy than it is a musical style. You know, like everybody I work with, I respect for some particular thing, or, you know, I respect them in some way or I wouldn't be working with them. And so I would say like elements of each artist, like, you know, I really admire Imogen Heap, obviously, for mm-hmm. her, the way that she does everything herself, and she has a very unique vision, and she just goes there and she does it from start to finish. She's created her entire own world, and she's stuck to it and hasn't allowed anybody to, you know, take that away. It's mm-hmm. very sort of, it's very refined and it's very unique to her. And then I also like, you know, like artists like Amanda Palmer, who are real independent spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So I really relate to her in that respect, you know, of just the kind of going out there as a woman and doing it on your own and you know, doing whatever you feel. So sometimes it's not even a musical affinity. It's sort of a state of being or a
mindset.
A mindset or a tactic, yeah.
Interesting, you know, because I wanted to ask you about Imogen Heap in particular because I thought I remember what she wore to, what was it, the Grammys a few years, it was 2 years ago or something,
yeah.
And people panned what she wore because she didn't wear, the ball gown or whatever, and it's like, ooh,
right.
Invited to this club. And, if that's her unique
She's herself,
thing,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
I'm in general, I'm attracted to people who are themselves without compromise. And it sounds really simple, but it seems to be surprisingly hard. A lot of people give in on some aspect. And so like Imogen and Amanda are both examples of people who are just fiercely themselves no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find it interesting that the thing about Imogen's Grammy outfit from 2007 was that? 2007?
Yeah,
because then you turn around and now you have like Lady Gaga. Look at her outfits.
I know.
Why is it okay for her to be eccentric but not for Imogen to be eccentric?
It's a mystery. I totally agree. And while we're on the topic of the Lady Gagas of the world, what do you make of of people like Lady Gaga? And I won't add anything more because I'm just curious what your take is.
I think that, she is an artist who is exactly a product of this moment in time, like every pop artist often is. There is a, she's at the center of all the things that are happening right now, and she kind of embodies, she sort of embodies the moment. So I have to hand it to her for being that. I'm not necessarily a fan of her music. I like her outfits. but that
I
might
like
be
the
point,
that was like
too.
A disco ball, with the big pad, thing.
Yeah. Yeah, she really is like a distillation of things. And that's also interesting in that I think I know actually quite a few people who they don't like her music at all, but they're totally fascinated with her and can't get enough of her. Which is very much a modern phenomenon. And so it's everything's continually changing, and she is, today's star, and who knows what tomorrow's star will be. So it seems I enjoy watching all these things from afar.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's actually kind of odd in a way because it's sort of the pop music industry, right? Like the comparison of what you do versus the pop music industry or maybe the country music industry, these sort of, more clearly siloed and defined kinds of music, right, in a way? I mean, do you feel that? Do you feel that there's this sort of, you fall into this bucket, you fall into this bucket kind of thing?
Yeah,
the music industry?
There's always been that. There's always been that, and I've never related to it at all in any way. So I think that's why I do view my career with a bit of surprise because I have such disdain for categorization in general. And I also have, like you said, quite a bit of irreverence for, the standard music industry and for pop music. And I've always viewed myself as being kind of very, 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 very much on the outside of it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. So I would say, the categories and the buckets, they continue to flourish like they always have, and they probably always will.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things for me is, you'll hear a pop song on the radio or, on your whatever radio you listen to, or Pandora. I love Pandora because it, you put in the artist and then it, puts in similar things. So I love it because it exposes me to new artists that I may never have heard of before because of the similarities of sound. So that's my own personal little thing with Pandora. But, it's what I find is odd is sometimes I'll be curious about an artist or I'm reading some gossip magazine in an airport and they say, oh, yeah, there's this acoustic set from Katy Perry from years ago when she was blonde. And so I'll be curious and I'll go on and listen and I go, God, that was so much – that I would listen to. But what the synth pop crap, which and I actually like a lot of electronica. I don't really care for it. It doesn't feel authentic to me. So it's kind of interesting. It seems like, you know, obviously she had to model herself into a bucket. She changed her hair color, you know, and all. She did a lot of things to get where she is. I don't know that she, you know, she was necessarily motivated by them, but. I guess the question I'm getting to is, have you ever felt pressure at times to try to fit into a bucket, or do you feel like what you do is, you know, genuinely niche enough that you've been kind of left alone in a way?
I've been totally left alone, for better or worse. And it's really. It's great because now I feel like all the years that I've been doing the same thing, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, I feel like now it's actually paying off. But I would be doing this whether the world was looking at me or not. So, I think perhaps because I have a classical background, I don't see as what I do as being necessarily related to pop, but it does so happen that it appeals to a lot of people who like pop music. And I think that perspective saves me in a way, because the world of classical is not necessarily based on appearance. It's based on music. Like, it's this sort of, you're creating this artistic musical product and you don't necessarily even know what the composer looks like.
Yeah, interesting, because actually when I was searching for, you know, a disc that, you know, you've either contributed to or something for the artwork for the Blog Talk Radio page, I searched on Amazon and I had an idea of what I wanted to put as the, you know, the album there. There wasn't, unfortunately, your Into the Trees album. I think that's the name of the album. Yes, it's coming out.
That's the one coming out, yeah.
Yeah, so I was looking for that particular one and it wasn't there. So I was like, okay, and I'm limited to what I can put into the box. So I have to use Amazon, which is usually fine. But it was really weird because when I searched, just did a general search under music, nothing of yours came up, but I had to use classical as the definition.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going, on Amazon just comes up under music. So I'm like, what sort of subheading is going on in like the, you know, whatever structure of, you know.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I first released my, I had an EP that came out like at the end of 2005, and I released it, you know, digitally via CD Baby, which was the only option really for digital
mm-hmm.
distribution at the time. And I remember, I don't think I remember how I categorized it. It was really difficult for me to know how to do that. And when it finally showed up in Apple iTunes, they categorized it for me as classical.
Oh, wow.
So I never chose that, but in a way it worked really well for me. So, you know, I never protested or anything. And so I'm not sure if it was CD Baby or it was iTunes. Maybe it was CD Baby that categorized me as classical. But so that meant that every digital retailer or stuff, they also categorized it as classical. That's just where I've been ever since.
Yeah, it was odd to me that, like, in the if I had gone to Amazon to buy something, it just came up under, you know, you just came up under music. But when I went in and had to do a more, I guess they were wanting me to do a more specific search, although there was a music category, it wouldn't bring you up unless I added classical for whatever reason. And I was frustrated by that because I think that there's
That is the other thing. It's really hard to find my music.
Yeah.
I've tried to make it easy, but it's hard.
Yeah.
You
know, how much time can you actually spend, you know, especially if you're self-releasing on this type of nuance of marketing?
Well, I don't do any marketing at all. I never have. I've never done any official marketing or publicity, but I've sold 30,000 records, so.
Yeah, but I mean, like, let's say you wanted to, you know, clarify your category, let's say you weren't happy with classical. You would yourself need to go and do that or employ someone to, right? Because you're doing self-distribution.
Well, you know what I think is really interesting is that because of Google and such, it seems like, you know, maybe this is because I used to work as an information architect But there are two main ways that people find things. You can either find things by drilling down into a category list, mm-hmm. you know, like the old Library of Congress categories, or, you know, music,
yeah.
and the type of music, you know, go down the category list. There are some people who click through all of those predefined buckets. And then there's the other way, which is people just search for something. You know, they go to Google and they say, like, they search for it. And they might start adding words to refine their search. And those mm-hmm. were those sort of like two methods of finding things were always kind of like argued, which one's better than the other, which one do people like. And the Google version is one, in my view.
Clearly,
so,
yeah.
right? You know, like when you want to find something out, you just go and you type it into the box. You don't like try to find, think of what category the thing you're looking for is in and then drill down
yeah,
the category.
Yeah, that would just be so frustrating.
You don't do that. So why is music still that way?
I don't. You know? I really don't know. I
like,
you know,
why is it that you have to, when you go to Apple iTunes to buy something, you have to go to the classical category in order to find my music?
Well, so I gotta say, Apple iTunes has got one of the worst search features too, so it makes it even worse. Because, I mean, this is kind of unrelated, but sort of a good example is, you know, I went to Columbia Journalism School, and everybody's going, you know, oh, you know, people are going to be able to distribute magazines and like, you know, Adobe or PDF or whatever on iTunes. And I'm going, they've been doing that for at least 3 years. But the problem yeah. is that the search is so crappy on iTunes that nobody can find them. So if you search, unless you know exactly who it is that's putting out the right. magazine, you can actually subscribe right. to it, and it goes right into iTunes.
Huh,
and people just don't know it. And so, you know, in a similar way, you know, it's like if people don't know where to find you or don't have a link, I mean, good luck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, my point is like that the music industry still lives in this old search model of like everybody's going to go looking in a specific kind of bucket. And I think your average human today, and Lady Gaga is a good example, your average human today is much more diverse than that. They're going to take little bits out of everything that they like. You know, they're going to watch this little television show on the internet. They're going to watch this one on cable. They're going to, you know, read this comic book. It's all, I think, going to be from all different genres. And they're not going to think about it, what genre it's in.
Right. Or care like, whether or not, you know, they just want it where they want it too, like device-wise or, you know.
Yeah.
I think, right. you know, there's a different expectation than there used to be.
Yeah. So I've been wondering if that would change. Now, I know all this is about record stores. It has to be that unlike, you know, in the digital realm where you can have one record or something can exist in multiple categories. But if you go into a store, you can't have a CD in the classical section and in the rock and roll section. You're not going to.
Right.
So that's where all this comes from. But, I mean, I can't remember the last time I went to a record store. I go to used record stores, but not new ones.
Yeah, same here. And I don't think most of them exist anymore. For
yeah.
the most part. I mean, a lot of the, frankly, a lot of the music that I like is distributed by independent author, you know, independent
yeah.
Artists. So like
yeah.
Gabrielle Roth, I love Gabrielle Roth and the Mirrors, and there's all kinds of interesting
mm-hmm.
sounds and whatever. She's always been someone where you have to go to her site to get, you know, Raven
yeah.
Records, she calls it. So you go there, or even Amy Mann. I mean, I think of
right.
her as one
yeah.
of the people that was like early and saying, okay, you're going to, I can't even remember who dropped who first, but
right.
you know, going the independent route and distributing on her own. And I really like her. So, and
yeah.
even, I remember seeing her CD somewhere, like at someplace kind of odd, like it was at the desk. And I remember thinking, oh my God, you know, remembering that she had self-released, and I didn't even care who the artist was, really.
Mm-hmm.
I would have bought it no matter what, because I wanted to support the artist being able to kind of control their
yeah.
own destiny.
That's the key thing. I mean, that's how I make a living, is that when people find out that I'm just a solo artist by myself, they often just buy the record just to support me so I can keep doing it. So that's really good. That's great.
Which is great. So, you know, we don't have much time left, but I'd love to know what you think. You know, sort of name sort of the achievement you're most proud of.
Well, I'm most proud to be making a living doing what I'm doing, honestly.
That's something to be proud of, especially
yeah,
with artistic,
I mean,
right?
Yeah, I feel really like I love what I do. This is what I've always wanted to do, and I'm doing it, and that makes me really proud. So I would say that's the achievement.
That's awesome. And, you know, one thing that I thought that you said that was kind of funny is you said, you know, you could relate to being kind of the, you know, the idea of feeling kind of, you know, out there in high school or whatever. But, you know, it seems like the people that peak in high school, you know. So I don't know if you want to attain your personal best in high school, it seems like the just
That's
rewards
true.
Come to the people that wait, right?
I was certainly a late bloomer in that respect.
Yeah. So you got your just desserts. Anything you want to talk about in terms of creative process? We don't have a lot of time, but I'll leave it up to you. In terms of how much time you would like to spend on that. I think people are always looking to get inside the minds of someone. You mentioned this a little bit earlier, and I just want to follow on because we have some comments here. People curious about, you know, you heard a symphony in your head. So, I mean, do you rush to get up to go to your cello and
I do.
Your process work?
I go through periods where I'm really, really – it's like – I call it it's springtime in my mind, where it seems like everything's growing all at once. It's really lush, and it's like this race against the clock to capture all the things that are in my head already and to try to somehow translate them into the physical world before they disappear. And I can usually only get a small fraction of what's in there. And so then I'll spend the whole rest of the time trying to take those things that I managed to capture and from my mind, which come during dreams or when I'm walking, or often when I'm asleep, that sort of half waking period when I can hear the whole thing all laid out how I want it to be. And then I have to try to do it, and it gradually fades over time. So it's like this mad rush against the clock. and then I usually get these sort of sketches out, and then I leave them to pursue other ones that come up. And then I find myself in this position where I have 10 sketches and I need to polish them, and the polishing takes forever. So that's why the album process is so long for me, is that I have all this material that's already kind of sketched out, and then I need to hunker down and actually polish it.
So, I mean, when you say long.
Polishing is like work. Oh, sorry,
yeah,
the polishing is like this hard work.
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, in any creative process, like you were talking about graphic designers, you know, it's the nuance that is the hardest sometimes to get to. And I'm wondering, so when you say your process is long, what kind of time frame is it?
I'd say it's hard to say because I tend to work on so many things all at the same time.
Yeah.
But I have to both conceive of the song or piece of music, whatever, and then I have to sketch it out and I have to record all the parts and then I play them off against each other, and, you know, It's sort of like this. It's like creating a large artwork, on a canvas. And I don't know. It can take a couple of months to do, or you know, maybe 3 months to do a piece of music from start to finish. If I were doing it perfectly from start to finish and not working on also simultaneously 6 other pieces of music at the same time.
But I mean, that's relatively small amount of time compared to people that go into the studio and try to refine stuff with a team of people. I mean, because it's you, it seems like you can drive the creative process at a finer clip, you know what I mean, in terms of speed.
Yeah, there's also, for better or worse, being your own single artist, because, you know, if I have a deadline that's you need to get this piece done by next week, I'll get it done by next week. Whereas if I have no deadline, I'll just perfect it and perfect it and perfect it and perfect it for about a year. So,
and have people ever commission you to do something specific for them? Because I know you do. You have a private performance you're going to today.
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
Actually,
that you're actually creating something. You're actually playing something that you've previously created. Is it more often that you, which is more?
I'd say about once a year I do a commission. So,
interesting.
Sure.
Well,
yeah.
I know that our time has come to an end, so I want to thank you so much for being on the program. I could go
on
chatting with you. You're so down to earth. It's so refreshing.
Oh,
and I just want to let you know Barbara Gomes from on Twitter says she's thinking about putting together a gig with women musicians in Brazil. Can I consider bringing you?
I wrote to her. Tell her that I wrote to her offline about that already.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, and I'll let you get on to your private performance and everything else you have to get to today.
Okay.
Thank you for being
on
the
thank
show.
Thank you. Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for asking me. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Zoe.
Bye.
So that was Zoe Keating, the wonderful cellist. If you have not listened to her work, please go to zoekeating.com. Take a look. You know, obviously, I'm a big supporter of independent musicians who are distributing, and she's just really fantastic. And the list of collaborations she's had with very well-known people, not that she's not well-known, but even more traditionally well-known for a longer time, goes on and on. And there's, you know, clearly a reason for that. She's really a unique talent. So very, very glad that she was able to join us on the A-list. And also a great example for musicians looking to, you know, go out on their own, or people that are, you know, in the theme of Seth Godin's book Lynchpin, you know, go for it, you know, go for what their personal dream and aspiration is from a creative standpoint. So anyway, wanted to make that personal comment because I think it's really inspiring when you talk to people, especially who, you know, turn 30 and a lot of people go, oh, it's over, or I've started on a track, and other people just say, you know what, scrap it. I'm going to start over and do what I really love. So kudos to Zoe Keating, and I hope that's been a bit of an inspiration to you if you tuned in and you've gotten a little bit different show than you've expected. I really hope that you take that away. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. And again, thank you for tuning into the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Remember to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio, would you, if you find us to be a favorite or a friend. We would love to be yours. And be sure to tune in next week when Sam Lawrence, who's the CEO of Black Box Republic, is my featured guest. You can catch that 1 week from today starting at 12 noon Pacific. As always, you can keep up with the latest on the show, archives, information at jenniferlindsay.com or on Twitter at Jennifer. It's Jennifer with an E-D at the end. Have a great weekend.